This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. I'm Matt Larkin here with the usual buddies of mine on a Monday. Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. Looks like Ryan's got a haircut. He's looking pretty sharp right now.
You know what I was thinking?
What are you thinking?
There's one thing I wanted to say, and I want to put this out there. I don't think that you could collectively get three hockey writers anywhere in North America, nay the world, who would have better hair than us.
And more of it.
No, like just good hair. Like I'm the silver fox.
and your hair's still going strong. Hairline is looking pretty good.
It's spectacular.
No widow's peaks.
It's perfect. It's just.
I think I was born with a full head of hair.
And Ryan's still going strong. Ryan's got a good hair game too. So any permutation of three writers anywhere, you would not find better hair among them.
I think it's a fair argument. A very fair argument.
To quote Sterling Archer, feel how thick this is. My barber charges me double.
My barber does. Like, we've talked about it before. Gus is his name. Yeah. Salon Dew, everybody. There's a free ad. He's a goalie, all right? The coach of this team is actually follically challenged. The Minnesota Wild. It's pretty shocking these days to look at the standings and see they've lost five games in a row. They're 7 points back of Chicago now. All of a sudden, eight losses in their past 10 games, as Ken opens his Coke yet again.
Diet Coke.
I mean, it's fair. Of course, obviously we can say we're worried about the Wild, but I guess the question is, how worried are you? Are you worried at this point that they're no longer worth taking seriously as a cup contender? Or do you think this team's getting a bit complacent because they're way ahead? Or what's going on with them?
Well, I think a couple of things that stand out are they're not getting the goaltending they were getting when they were winning. I think Devan Dubnyk's save percentage during the streak is something like .899 or something like that. And they've scored two or fewer goals in 7 of the 10 games that they've played in their last 10. So they're not getting the goaltending they were getting before, and they're clearly not getting the offense that they were getting when they were putting up all those wins and seemingly running away with the Central Division. But I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to sort of judge whether or not a streak right now of either a winning streak or a losing streak is going to have that much bearing on the playoffs. I think when Chicago won the Cup in 2015, they lost their last four games that year. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's not really something to get too worried about, except for the fact that I think maybe now they're kind of being more of what they are. You know, like they clearly were not that good when they were winning 12 games in a row, and they're clearly not this bad, but they're kind of in between. I don't think anybody expected the Minnesota Wild to be an upper tier cup contender.
I think
this year
had them out of the playoffs in our season preview. Yeah.
So I don't think anybody expected them to be that this year. So I think maybe they're just kind of playing to where they should be.
Yeah, it's almost like they're properly rated right now. They're not the Chicago Blackhawks. And I think these things, they kind of move in tandem, too, as we see the Blackhawks, they're just becoming that unstoppable killing machine we're used to, where when you watch them play and you see the things that Duncan Keith does out there, where you're like, yep, there's another Duncan Keith play, where he just completely had that entire sequence in the bag. He knew exactly what he was doing. You know, he can disarm anybody. You know, Chicago's the team to beat in the Central. They're probably the team to beat in the West, if not the NHL.
Yeah, I've changed my cup pick after watching Chicago closely the last little while and following them around a bit. They have a feel of a team, like the whole room
they're,
and everything.
They're locked in.
Yeah, and they're locked in, and they just have the feel that, we're going to do it this year. Everything's falling our way. Yeah. We got guys playing great. And I just really feel that Chicago is, I think they know it. I think that's the thing, is they know. And like I was talking to Duncan Keith the other night after they were here in Toronto, and I said, hey, see you in June. that's when I'm going to see you.
Yeah. It's a great point, because if you look at Minnesota's lineup, they do have some Stanley Cup experience. Eric Staal's won a cup. Zach Parise has gone to a finals. There's a couple of guys that have gone to finals. But I think you're getting into crunch time now, and especially because Minnesota was a front runner, where all of a sudden they don't have easy games. You know, you can't sneak up on teams anymore after you've had a wild win streak. So now they're getting everybody's best, and we're really getting to see what their mettle is. And it'll be interesting once they get to the playoffs, who is this wild team? Can they hang with the best teams in the Central? What happens if they get into a series with the Blackhawks? Who comes out of that? I think right now it seems pretty obvious who it would be.
Yeah,
but you still got to play.
They beat them three times this year already, right? And
in the past six weeks.
The thing that concerns me a little bit about the Wild is Bruce Boudreau is losing it. Like he lost it yesterday. He was like, he took like one question. They said, "Did you get any optimism out of playing well in the second period, being resilient?" And he said, "Yeah, well, you make it out like we were good. I'm done." And he walked out. To me, that's, I don't know, that's a coach that seems to be panicking a little bit. And I don't know, we've seen that before. you know, we've seen that before.
You have to worry. And I think, I mean, I think I said it last week, but working on a story on Boudreau for the playoff preview, I talked to a few of the Wild players, and they did not seem comfortable with the mention of Chicago, the mention of the standings. They, like, Mikko Koivu, I think, was almost prickly about it. There was a skittishness there. I think Chicago's in their head. And also, this team, I mean, while they're extremely deep, maybe the deepest team in the conference. You know, you got Parise and Palmaville on your third line. Even if they're in their 30s, that's pretty good. But this team's not...
Healthy scratch.
There you go. Yeah. And this team is not going to have a 30-goal scorer. It's hard to win a Stanley Cup without one guy you can rely on in overtime to terrorize the opponent. Like, you know, you're a Tarasenko or even a Patrick Kane or, you know... The Wild... Granlund's going to probably finish with 28 goals and he'll be their leading scorer. So I think that's a big problem. It's interesting too with Chicago, Ken, because I've been thinking about it a lot too. You know, our playoff preview's coming out, where I'm not going to say who we picked, but it may or may not be Chicago. It may or may not be an Eastern Conference team. But I wonder how much emotion plays a role and nostalgia, because we think of Chicago as this, you know, they're the New England Patriots of the NHL. They can just flick the switch and feel it. But what's different about the team this year is if you look at the analytics, and I know it sounds, people get annoyed, you always go back to the analytics, but the correlation is so strong. Every year the team that wins the Cup has the strong analytics. Last year it was Pittsburgh, right? Every year Chicago's won. They were elite in analytics, but this year they're not. So I'm trying to ignore my emotions, but it's really hard to do because they're just, they look so good right now.
Yeah, I mean, to me they look like a team that doesn't have any real flaws. And I'm just wondering, maybe those analytics turn around in the playoffs. Maybe they do become a possession team, because they sure looked pretty good at the possession game in the games that I watched them play. And when they don't have the puck, they're pretty good at getting it back. And guys like Patrick Kane are just as good as they've ever been at lugging the puck out of the zone and creating opportunities and getting into shooting areas. And I don't know. I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, the analytics don't lie in this respect. But, you know, maybe this is a situation where, you know, the Blackhawks just kind of flip that on its head and they turn it around. Then they become a good possession team. Because I do know one thing. I do know that they've got a coach that manages his talent better than any coach in the NHL right now. Like, not, it's not even close. Like, manages them during the regular season, during the playoffs. He's a guy who, to me, has an uncanny ability to know who's going and who's not, and to play the guys that are going. And I've seen it time and time again. And you know, I guess I'm going to be one of those people. You got to show me that's going to bear out this year. So,
and talking about possession, this guy, he's on the best possession line in hockey, the best possession line of the last several years, or this generation, you could argue, as long as he's playing with Patrice Bergeron. Brad Marchand, it's a double-take stat. You look at the scoring race, you see, of course, Crosby, McDavid up there, but 1 point behind them. Brad Marchand is still there, having an unbelievable season. Can we start talking about him as a Hart Trophy candidate, or is the competition too fierce for him still?
I feel like this is still a Crosby versus McDavid race. As good as Marchand has been, I think when you play on a team and a line with Patrice Bergeron, it's hard to say you are head and shoulders above everybody else. And you look at, you know, I mean, I know the Bruins have shuffled their lines a lot, but you had Pasternak as well, making big contributions. And the Bruins are not an elite team this year. They're going to be in the playoffs. But are they going to be the third team in the Atlantic, which is the weakest division, or are they going to be a wild card team? We don't know yet. That's still up in the air. Edmonton, I know they've been fighting for the wild card as well, but you just see like the gulf of in talent between McDavid and like everybody else on that team is pretty big. I mean, Leon Draisaitl's been great in tandem with McDavid, and Cam Talbot has had some great stretches as well. And you look at Crosby, the numbers he's put up despite missing some games at the beginning of the year, and you look again at Pittsburgh being, you know, one of the most, I was going to say classiest teams, but the class of the NHL. It just feels like Crosby and McDavid, it's kind of like their race, and maybe you even toss in Erik Karlsson
based on
the effect that he's had on
and Burns,
on Ottawa.
Both. Karlsson and Burns, I think.
Karlsson and Burns, yeah, and just the impact they've had. I'm thinking with Ottawa and Karlsson, like when you watch the Senators, you just kind of say, like, I don't understand how this is a playoff team, other than the fact that they've got Erik Karlsson.
He controls the game, he controls the team. I don't think that race is over yet. By the way,
I don't think the Norris race is over. No, it's not.
There's only 5 points separating those two guys, right? So it's kind of ass backwards because Carlson's playing the best hockey of his career. He's playing way better than he ever did when he won the Norris Trophy,
leading the league in block shots.
And he might not win it because another guy's putting up points. But we're back to, what are we talking about again?
The Brad Marchand.
I forget, I'm old. anyways, I don't see, like, I think he's in the conversation. I don't see him winning it because he's Brad Marchand. Because he's Brad Marchand. Like, you're going to look at that trophy and you're going to go, okay, this guy, you know, Jonathan Toews and, you know, MVP, Brad Marchand. And then you're going to go, hey, that's going to be like the Corey Perry year, 2011. But people go, hey, remember that year Brad Marchand won the MVP award? Wasn't that weird? And I just get the sense that more than most other awards, the MVP is, I think it goes to a guy who's like, the excellence is enduring, you know? So you give it to like the superstars of the league who are good for year after year after year. I'm not sure that Brad, that this is not, like, and I'm not saying it is, but I'm not sure that this isn't just a couple of years of really, really spectacular play from this guy that might end up going in a different direction not too long from now.
It's true, and I think the award, it's biased towards centers, and even Patrick Kane's not a center, but it's biased towards drivers of the play, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can call Brad Marchand as talented as he is. He's very fast, he's got great hands, he does everything well. He's not the driver of play on that line. It's Patrice Bergeron. Bergeron's arguably the best driver of play, at least according to the possession numbers, best in the league, best of his generation at driving play. And I think, obviously, Crosby and McDavid and Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns, those guys drive the play. They force the puck up the ice.
They're the power train.
They're the power train. Whatever power train means, they're that.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're at the center of it all, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And speaking of Marchand and his line mates, Ryan was at the practice today. Bruins in town to face the Leafs, and he caught up with David Pastrnak, the other winger on that line. Listen here.
So, David, thanks for doing this. And first of all, we're in the stretch run here. How excited are you for these last sort of dozen or so games?
Yeah, obviously we have a good week coming up, you know, a couple of important games for us, so it's always exciting, you know, and I like those kind of games, and we'll try to do my best and enjoy those.
It's been an interesting year for Boston because obviously you were always playing great possession hockey but just not getting the goals. Was that frustrating, or were you guys telling yourselves, like, we're playing the right way?
No, I think, last games we doing a pretty good job, and it's all about confidence. You know, we know we are a good team, and we know we have a good players here, so something like that you need to keep in your mind. You know, even if you lose one game, you need to try to bounce right back. Even though you lost, you need to stay focused and confident.
What did the coaching change mean to this team this season midway through?
Yeah, obviously, I think we became a lot more energized, you know, and a lot, how I said, we got a lot of confidence back. We know we are a good team, and we're playing like this right now.
Now, for you personally, it's been a great offensive breakthrough. Still a young guy in the NHL, but what has it meant for you to have this sort of success early on?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I'm playing with some good players and playing lots of minutes. So it's good and really happy doing well. And hopefully I can help the team to make the playoffs.
One storyline that's come up a lot lately is Brad Marchand. Is he a possible Hart Trophy candidate? What have you seen from him this season, and how valuable has he been for you guys?
Well, he's carrying us on his back, you know, for a long time now, and he's just an unbelievable player, and you know, he's doing well and having the points, and hopefully he will keep going, and he's one of the top players in the league now.
Another big issue has been Olympic participation. How do you feel about the potential for players to go next time, since it is such a big international event?
Yeah, obviously. For me as a European guy, you know, when I was younger, that was my dream, you know, and I think for all the European players, it's Olympics is the dream, you know, and obviously when you get older, it's NHL as well. But for me, it would be very disappointing if I couldn't go represent my country. And how I said, I haven't been on one yet, so we really want to represent my country there.
And actually, one of the greatest NHL Olympic moments ever was the Czech Republic winning way back when with Dominik Hasek. What sort of impact did that have on you? Like, how much do you remember about that Olympics?
Well, I was 2 years old, so not much. But obviously, when I come back, when I look it up back and see all those legends, you know, in Czech and those guys who won it there, you know, they was guys who we looked up, you know, who always went to Czech national team if they had a chance and play for it, you know. So it's good. It's awesome to see all those guys. Win.
And finally, you know, looking at the Bruins roster, there's a really good mix of veterans and, you know, Stanley Cup winners and young players. I mean, you're young, and there's guys that are even younger than you are. What do you think about that mix and how it translates on the ice?
It's good, you know, the guys, how you said, Stanley Cup winners and veterans are helping us, you know, a lot and kind of dictate us what way we should go, and especially this time of the year, it's very helpful by them.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Looking at the standings again, it's getting distressing, especially for poor Jerome McGinley's sake. You look at the LA Kings, and there they are. They tried to make I guess you could call it a move at the trade deadline, but they're sliding out of the race, 6 points out of a playoff spot now. It's starting to look like they're dead. They're done. I'm just curious what you guys think, because we've given the Kings a lot of slack for the last several years, saying, oh, they turned it up at the last minute in the playoffs. They can get in as an 8 seed. They've done it before. That's all they need. You know, they're bored by the regular season, et cetera, et cetera. But at what point do we have to say, you know what, the fun's over? The big hockey, the dominant down-low forechecking style, it's dead. It's a speed game now. LA's passé. And do you start thinking about blowing up this team? And do you consider firing Dean Lombardi as GM?
I think Dean has earned himself the right to get out of this, to try to get out of this, and I think the coaching staff and the scouts they've all earned the right to try and work their way out of this. But is this style of play dead? I'm not 100% sure it's dead. It's dead right now, but trends change so quickly, right? And the second thing is that, I mean, these guys can't score. They're not losing because they're a good possession team that cycles the puck around. They're not a good team because they're a possession team that cycles the puck around and doesn't do anything with it, you know? So, I don't know, blow it up? Good luck. Good luck. How are you going to blow this up? How are you going to blow this up when Anze Kopitar is under contract for another 7 years? Dustin Brown's under contract for another 5 years? Trevor Lewis is under contract for another 4 years, and, you know, and Gabrick and all these guys, like, that's going to be a tough thing to blow up.
That's the big problem is, like, you just don't have a lot of wiggle room there, and again, not only do you have the length of the contracts, but the ages of these guys,
right.
They're all north
right.
of 30, and you say to yourself, are they going to get better with age? That doesn't tend to
it's
be
not,
how
yeah,
hockey
not
works.
Well,
yeah, not
Andre
in your 30s.
Tell us that they're not, that they aren't going to get better with age.
Yeah, exactly.
It's clearly on the decline.
Yeah, and so not only do you have these big contracts, but how do you move them when these are, you know, depreciating assets? And if you want to get faster, you got to get younger. They haven't had a lot of high draft picks in the past couple of years. They haven't necessarily hit on those draft picks in an elite way in a couple of years. I thought, you know, the past draft was really kind of a tough one. Like, I think Cale Clegg has some potential, but, like, otherwise, you know, they only had four picks. None of them were really, like, home run picks. I wasn't
their last,
too
their last in Future Watch.
Exactly.
The victims of their own success. And that's the thing. I do consider the Kings the victims of their own success, just in the sense that, you know, Lombardi, I think, gave out a lot of contracts as almost sort of thank yous. Look at the Gabbert contract, right?
Absolutely.
It was guys, hey, you've done a good job. You guys have won a couple of cups. Jonathan Quick, we're going to pay you until the year 2037. Even though your hips are going to give away, no problem. You deserve it. You won the Conn Smythe. And I think, I mean, it's probably worth it. But now I think if you're Kings fans, you're just going to have to eat some years of mediocrity until these contracts expire.
Mediocrity might be being generous to mediocre teams.
You will crave mediocrity.
They might, like, mediocre might be a bit high. They might be bad. A couple of things I want to say. Number one is that I don't know that these were thank you contracts as much as the trap that teams fall into when they have success. And we talked about the Blackhawks before, and one of the reasons why they are where they are and why they keep contending is they don't fall into that trap.
Yep.
They identify six or seven players who are untouchables, and everybody else is expendable.
And they trade them when they're still at high value.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Andrew
Ladd,
peak value.
Yeah, exactly. Dustin Byfuglien, the whole deal, right? Yeah. So I think there's that. And then secondly, I think that, like I said, I think they're going to get the chance to get themselves out of this. But I think that Dean Lombardi is a really good hockey man. He's really smart, but he's going to have to change his way of thinking. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to change his way of team building. And this doesn't just go to the Los Angeles Kings.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the team he built for the World Cup.
Yeah.
That team was the most ill-suited group for that tournament that you could possibly think of, and it showed. It showed on the ice. So I think he's, and I know, and Dean's a smart guy, and I like Dean, and I think he's really bright, and I think he can do it. But he's going to have to change his way of thinking, and he's going to have to adapt to the way the teams play now. And if he does that, I think they have a chance. If he doesn't, then they're just going to keep mucking around where they are.
And is Daryl Sutter the man that can bring that change behind the bench?
Well, that is a good question. That's a very good question. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, without trying to give away what I've written for an upcoming issue that's not on newsstands yet, but I did crunch some numbers about recent Cup winners, and specifically the Chicago teams, the Pittsburgh teams, and the LA teams, and I looked at the average size of all the teams, and the Kings really are the exception, especially recent years. But they're the outlier. They're big and heavy, but the Hawks teams, the Penguins teams, on average, the Cup winner is not just average size, it's below average size, which highlights the value of speed. And especially the last two teams. The last two Cup winners, Pittsburgh and Chicago, those two teams, average player was in the 190-pound range, 194 or something like that, right?
Mm.
Not even close to 200 pounds, and the league average is well over 200. LA won, the last team was about 210,
12.
The average player.
Yeah.
So it's really shifting toward a smaller, speedier game, and I do think it's passing the Kings by.
Yeah, way to not give away any of your story, though.
Well, that's only one part of the story. That's only one little snippet.
You didn't mention height.
Just a little taste.
This is the kind of value you get from the hockey news.
Yeah. And speaking of the Kings, it's a good transition to our reader questions. We had one reader question about the Kings, and specifically Drew McGinley. It's Mike Shalen. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. He says, based on the fact that the Kings are not going to make the playoffs, do you think Drew McGinley comes back for one more year? I'll answer first. I know it's sad to say, but I don't know if that's Jerome's decision to make. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's going to be a market for Jerome anymore. His skills are declining a lot, and even if he decided he wanted to give the can another kick, I mean, he's one of those guys, I don't think a team's going to be able to pay him less than $1 million because they wouldn't want to insult him, so he's going to cost $1 million, I think.
Plus huge bonuses.
He'd
have a big bonus thing.
And I don't know if that's a wise investment for any team. I think it's, I mean, it's same for Shane Doan, but I don't know. I don't know if it's his choice, really.
Well, the problem for Jerome McGinley is that if he comes back to win a cup, right, he would be coming back ostensibly to get that elusive cup. Well, I mean, so many things have to go right for a team to win a cup that really, can you pick one team in the summer that you think is going to win the cup? So, but let's say he wants to come back to win a cup, and there's a, you know, any number of five or six teams that he could go to. The only problem is those teams don't have room for him. Like either salary, in terms of salary cap, or in terms of the way they play the game, unless, you know, they want he's okay with being a fourth liner who gets, you know, 7 or 8 or 10 minutes a game and maybe sits out 20 games as a healthy scratch next year. And does he want to do that? Does he want to come back to do that? I'm not sure. I suspect he probably does. I suspect if it's up to him and somebody will sign him, I suspect we will see Jerome Iginla back in the NHL next year for that one last crack. But he's, you know, his decision to sign in Colorado was not a good one for achieving that goal. And the trade to LA was not a good one for achieving that goal. So he's got to go somewhere, probably a team that maybe isn't like a huge, huge favorite to win it, but could win it and might be able to accommodate him.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think in my head how you could make it work. And it almost feels like he'd have to sign with like a bottom feeder team. Maybe he even signs with like Vegas with the understanding that I want to be dealt at the deadline to, let's say, Anaheim for an example, you know, a team that by the time you get to the deadline, salary would be like so small that you could fit it under the cap, and he's essentially a mascot, which is kind of sad to say about a future Hall of Famer, but that's where we're at right now. And it's like, if we want to be pragmatic about things, a team is going to have to, like, you know, let Iginla win the cup, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Next question from Mike Rangel. Whatever, Mike.
Was he a Rangel?
Was he a Rangel? That's right. That's what they play at the Rangel family dinner. What has been the biggest surprise of the season? CBJ's emergence? That's Columbus, by the way, everybody. Stars underachieving? Oilers, Leafs in playoff positions? What do you guys think?
I'm going off the board on this. I'm going off the board. And what surprised me the most this season is that none of the teams that have put together these massive winning streaks have run away with anything. You know? I mean, Columbus had a 16-game winning streak. Like, in most years, you think, well, you might as well just wrap up first place and give it to them. Right now, they're in third place in their division. Minnesota had a 12-game winning streak. They're on the fritz. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia will become the first team in NHL history to have a 10-game winning streak and not make the playoffs. You know, and the only other team is Calgary, and they're in there, but they're kind of still mucking around trying to get into that third spot in the Pacific. So, like, I would just think in other years when you see these teams put together these wicked streaks, you know, you see them end up a little higher in the standings.
Yeah. For me, I will say Columbus. You know, in the summer, you look at it, and it's like, John Tortorella, he hasn't had very much success behind the bench, particularly after the World Cup, too. He's going into a situation in Columbus where they don't have a go-to guy. Sergei Bobrovsky, you know, Vezina winner, but had some health issues. And then we're at this point in the season where everything went well. It's like Tortorella's, you know, very famous torturous training camp really paid off. The conditioning made them one of the best teams in the first period in the entire NHL. You know, they build up these big leads. Sometimes they were just blowing teams out. Cam Atkinson has been an elite scorer. Alexander Venberg has become that, like, number one center that the team needed. Maybe he's a number two center in the long run, but
he might be one of the most underrated players.
He's probably one of the most underrated players.
He might be one of the most underrated players.
Yeah, so you're getting these players step up where you have these questions and you're actually getting answers, and you get this great young decor, Zach Werenski, even better than we thought he would be. And the expectations were pretty high.
Right.
And then of course Bobrovsky being healthy and playing excellent, it all came together, and what we're seeing is a team where now it's like, man, like, what kind of damage could Columbus do in the playoffs?
That's right, tied for the best record in the league. I'm going to say, as my pick, I'm going to go with the Ottawa Senators. We've talked about it throughout the year. I look at that team and I say, where's the talent? They've had the revolving door of goalies, Craig Anderson in the lineup, having obviously the really sad personal situation. Mike Condon comes in there, goes on a run. It just feels like Erik Karlsson and friends is what I'd call the team. And somehow they could still win that division. I just don't see it. And honorable mention on an individual basis, Connor Sheary. this little guy, 5'8",
yeah,
he's almost a point per game player, having a monster year playing with Crosby. I'm just blown away by that guy.
Yeah, couple of things. First of all, I'm not convinced Ottawa's not a 1 year wonder. I could see this team regressing back into the pack quite dramatically next season. Mm. And you know, they just bore the living shit out of you too. Like, it's just unbelievable. It like I was watching them in their game against Tampa Bay last week. I was at that game, and they had a 0-2-3-4 check. Like, it was a forecheck on a technicality. They weren't going even over the red line.
I hope that they at least have the lead in that game.
I can't remember if they were leading at that time or not. They might have been. I can't remember. It was tied. Or they might have been protecting a one-goal deficit. Anyways, so there's that. And the second thing is, I want to apologize to Columbus fans. I said they were in third place. I believe they're actually tied with Washington for first with 100, and Pittsburgh's in third with 99. But the point being that they haven't run away with that division, right, despite the fact that they had a 16-game winning streak. So let's just make sure that we get that all straightened out.
Let the record
show.
Yeah.
The points were wrong. One more reader question. This is from Linus Freeman, or Freeman. Reasons behind...
Or Linus.
Or Linus, yes. Or Linus.
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 Sorry, Linus, or whatever you are. Reasons behind Michael Backlund's great season this year. What do you guys think caused the breakout?
Well, I think part of it is just the maturation of a game that's probably been underrated for years. He's always been a very good possession player and a very good two-way player. But also, you look at his line mates, you get another great possession guy in Michael Frolik, and then, of course, the fantastic rookie Matthew Tkachuk. I think putting those factors together, you're getting guys that are all merging at the same time. And all of a sudden, what we're seeing is this kind of like this super Corsi line in Calgary that's been so effective and so dangerous. And you know, they all play different roles on that line, and the chemistry worked out. And it just all came together. And I think, you know, Backlund is finally getting his due.
He's a guy too that's been trending upward, like, yep, the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I, you know what, I don't know for a fact what it is, but I think a big part of it is the coaching change that they made in Calgary to Glenn Gullitson. And I mean, I know it was last season, but
it takes a while.
But prior to that, they played Bob Hartley, and it was very high risk, wide open, lots of comebacks, you know, that kind of
bad possession team.
And that's just not Backlund's game. He's going to make the safe play every single time. Every single time he's going to make the safe play. And I just don't think that he was a guy that was going to excel in that kind of environment, whereas now here that he's in one that's a lot more structured, I think it lends itself a lot better to his game.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. I think Gullitson is a coach that understands the possession game a lot more, so he's almost made that line the de facto first line. It's been a dominant line. So,
well, de facto, is it the top line?
Maybe there's no de facto. It might just be the first line. You're right. Time to end it off with the greatest game ever invented. Was he a Ranger?
I feel like there hasn't been enough jocularity in this podcast yet.
You know what?
I started off strong with hair tie.
Yeah, hair was a good one. Yeah.
I also have to ask, what does jocularity mean? I don't know. Don't know what it means.
It's funny jock stuff.
Yeah.
You can't force it. You can't force jocularity, right? Maybe it'll emerge on its own.
You never know.
You never know. Speaking of jocularity... I'm going to lead off with Ken Reggett.
No.
Shit. There you go. There's jocularity.
Like, seriously, Ken Reggett?
Well, I thought you would associate him with, you know, he was a Flyer and a Penguin, so you guys might have thought, like, something Patrick Division, and then maybe you would have, you know.
I was thinking it was a Maple Leaf.
Damn, that was my worst one. My worst one I've ever done, easily. I just got owned.
Yeah. Okay, I got one. And the reason why I'm asking this is because I was walking into the Air Canada Centre on Saturday night and I saw a Sergei Bereznin sweater. Somebody was wearing a Sergei Bereznin sweater. And I thought, that's pretty awesome. Anyway, so my guy is Sergei Bereznin.
Pretty sure not a Ranger.
Yeah,
I think he was a Blackhawk.
Yeah, I'm going to say not a Ranger.
I don't have a Ranger vibe from Sergei Bereznin.
Well, then you guys are right. And this is, okay,
sweet.
Good.
All right. Back on the goaltender tip, Dwayne Rollison.
Hmm.
Ever a Ranger?
Let's see. He was an Oiler. He played for the Lightning. I want to say he was a Lightning. I just couldn't bring myself to say he was a Lightning.
He was a Bolt. He was a Bolt. Yeah.
It's funny. He's been a lot of abstract things. He was a Wild Lightning.
Yeah.
But you know what? Okay. I don't think Ranger is one of the things he was. I'm going to say no. I think he wasn't he an Islander at some point, the very end of his career, maybe. I'm going to say not a Ranger.
I'm not like again with you guys. I'm not getting the Dwayne Roloson vibe for the Rangers. Just let me. Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Dwayne Roloson, not a Ranger.
So we swept.
We swept.
And we all picked guys who weren't Rangers.
That's right. No Rangers.
I'm hoping this game hasn't run its course.
We'll find out.
Because we picked guys that weren't Rangers.
Maybe next week it'll be. Was he a Flyer? You'll have to tune in to find out. Thanks for listening, guys.